Welcome to the Southern Ground Podcast, provided by Alabama Extension through Auburn University. Extension educators Shane Harris and Dr. Chip East discuss seasonal lawn and garden topics, address common questions, and provide the practical solutions you want to know. Let's dig into our Southern Ground.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Southern Ground. I'm Shane Harris, and this with me again is Chip East. And today, in episode 3, we're going to dig deeper into another topic, a topic that's very timely here for mid-January and the middle of winter, selecting fruits to grow around your home or your farm.
Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons to grow fruits, and we need to talk about why we would. It's not just what I like to eat. It's like what grows well in your area, and it's just something to think about before we plant. But, I mean, obviously we want to plant the crops we do like to eat, but some of them are a little harder to grow than others, and you just need to understand how to manage the crop before you buy it. It looks good in a picture, but how does it do in on your property?
Yeah, and being wintertime now, a lot of people begin to anticipate spring. They think about planting some fruit trees, some small fruits. Start thinking about what varieties work here in Alabama and the Deep South. They're being teased from the seed catalogs and online photos from social media. That's a pretty plant. Or so even to see it in a grocery store, farmer's market. I wish I could grow that, or I wish I had that as part of my home orchard or farm. So it's a good time to be at least thinking about it, possibly selecting it, and even planting your home orchard.
Absolutely. And there's reasons why we would want to grow our own. And I can tell you, whether you're the farmer or the homeowner, freshness is a big deal. And I always tell farmers, they'll ask, well, you know, I'm starting to farm, or I'm thinking about growing a new crop. What should I grow? And I always say, wherever you buy produce at, think about the produce that tastes good and the produce that tastes bad. And if you're really thinking of something to add, the money's made in growing the produce that tastes bad. And what I mean by that, well, sometimes through shipping and everything, for instance, tomatoes might not taste as good from certain places as they would off of a farm. Well, that's could be a moneymaker. That could be a good crop to grow. Peaches might taste terrible from certain locations or certain places, but to the farmer in freshness, oh, that's a good moneymaker for them. Strawberries is another one you see. So, yeah, a lot of people don't know what a fresh, you know, certain things taste like because they've always purchased things that are not fresh. Freshness by far is the number one reason to grow your own.
And having fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, everybody loves that. But the first question or the second question we would ask is, how many do you want? You know, I can eat a fresh peach in the middle of July. We might want one or two peaches, but we probably don't need several bushes of peaches. That's a lot of peaches to eat at one time before they begin to rot or go bad. What are you going to do with them? Are you going to eat them? Are you going to freeze them? Are you going to preserve them? Are you going to share them with others? Are the animals going to get them? The squirrels going to get them? That's what I quit doing peaches a long time ago, because the squirrels just pull them off my tree before I could get them.
I always ask people, again, what are you going to do with it? Now we know how many you need. Now we know how many trees to plant. I don't know till you tell me how much you want to eat, or you're trying to sell or provide food for the neighborhood or what, and then we can help you more about how many to plant. But freezing, preserving, sharing with others, those are good reasons to grow your own, and I love those reasons and everything. So, yeah, we always eat what you can fresh and preserve the rest.
And it's also, you know, good. It's a good hobby. A lot of people just like having backyard fruit. They enjoy the flowers in the spring. They love going out there and just picking, eating fresh muscadines or some fresh figs. It just becomes hobby. It can be fun. They can also be frustrating too now, because any kind of garden has a challenge, but there's always good. There's always the bad.
Well, it's like fishing. That's a hobby, but you like it when you catch a bunch. When you got the vegetables or fruit or what as a hobby, when you're growing something, we want to be productive. We're not just out there in the sun working for nothing. We want production.
What type of fruit should you grow? There's several things that you want to think about. You and I were talking before this, you know what your objectives are. If this is going to be a hobby farm, is it going to be a business? And then know your limitations. and we want to say this up front, growing fruits is a lot of labor. There's a lot of work involved. It's an investment. And so as we talk to this podcast and give you some ideas to think about, some tips to go forward when you're choosing these crops and deciding what you want to grow, know how much space and time and effort you want to put into this. It may be easier just to go buy them.
And everybody's different in what they want. Again, we're growing it. I think freshness is why. But just because we like to eat it, we can go buy it from somebody else that does all this work to eat it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Great farmers does a wonderful job of providing food for us to eat. Wonderful thing. But what are we trying to accomplish? It might be just to keep, you know, kids busy, give them a job in the summertime. There's reasons, but I'm on the commercial side, so I mean, to me, it's the farmer that it can be a job and to make money. But if we're just trying to feed ourselves all year, or are we just trying to supplement a little bit of strawberries for a little while? We don't realize we eat all the time. And sometimes if you're trying to provide all the food you eat, that is a lot of fruit. If we're doing vegetables, a lot of vegetables and all, and you might not be wanting to put in that kind of time. And that's kind of about the limitations. It's like, well, my little girl could eat an acre of strawberries. I don't know if she could eat an acre, but she can eat a lot. But that is a lot to tend to and very expensive to plant.
You got to understand, we talked about pruning on the prior podcast. This time of year, people are doing a lot of pruning, even on the fruit trees. And if you have a lot of apples and peach and muscadines and figs and blueberries, that's a lot of time and effort to get ready for the next season. So if you don't have time for that, or if you don't have that physical ability to do that, or don't have the knowledge and experience, we'll try to give you the knowledge and education. But just know that there's a lot of labor before you get to that harvest.
One time we was doing a pruning workshop, and I was pruning, have a kind of a before and after. So before people got there, we was doing some pruning. And me and another one of our coworkers, we were pruning this muscadine, and we both knew what we were doing. So we're pruning. It took us an hour to prune one plant. Well, what if you had 10 of them? So, okay, that's 20 hours of, if you was doing it by yourself, so that'd be two different days and things like that to prune. So
always start small. You can always expand later on, but you may not need 10 peach trees. You may not need 20 blueberry plants. You may not need, you know, 5, 6, 7 muscadines. And you may not have the space either.
Yeah. It just takes time to whatever it is. I don't care if you buy a new car. Now we got to change oil in it. Now we got to take care of it. And the same thing with our fruit.
Yeah. So choosing a crop. And this is really what I want to emphasize here for especially the deep south. We're in Alabama. And so a lot of things that we're going to refer to is the climate here in Alabama. And one thing is that what you see growing in the grocery store may not be what can grow in Alabama. There's very few varieties that and cultivars that we would recommend that may match the farmer's market or the national grocery stores. Is it well adapted? Is it going to be able to deal with our Alabama heat, the humidity, cold? Doesn't sometimes get cold enough for some crops. Drought. We have a lot of drought in Alabama. It's hot in August. Are there going to be disease and insects that attack those? There's always something that wants to eat that fruit more than you do. If it's a bug or if it's a squirrel or if it's a crow or whatever, there's always something after those fruits. So those are things that you got to think about, plus spraying. If you like those peaches, you got to spray to get a crop.
And we do like to eat them. And I'm not, I guess it depends on what you're used to. We grow a lot of blackberries in the south. They grow a lot of raspberries in the north. We can grow raspberries, not saying we can't, but they don't like our heat. Well, I know a lot of people who's grown them, and we can grow them. I don't want to say we can't grow, but I'd certainly put blackberries ahead of that as far as adapted to the south. We have a hard time growing cherries. That's not something I would put high on my list. I've grown pineapples before. I mean, they have to be protected, but it's a long process growing a pineapple. I don't know that I would get in that business being here, because they can be grown in other places and shipped easy. So, again, the crops that's easy adapted for us, that's kind of going to be the one that grows the best.
That's going to be peaches, nectarines, apples, blueberries, blackberries, figs, muscadines, some bunch grapes. So that's going to be majority of the things that we have in Alabama.
Yeah. And I hate the spraying thing. They all, the South, we have insects and disease, and you're right. There are some things that a lot of people say, I don't want to spray. Well, there's certain things that don't require a lot of spraying, and that's just something up front we need to talk about. Do we, like blueberries and muscadines, a lot of times we don't spray those at all. A homeowner wouldn't at all.
General, small fruits are a lot easier than the tree fruits when it comes to a spray schedule and labor.
Absolutely.
So think about that. If you're going back to having time and your limitations, are you going to have the time and the finances to spray on a regular basis just to get a handful of fruit?
If we start off spraying and then we get busy and miss a few sprays, it's hard to go back. That spray, the fungicide may be, in a way, a protective coating, but once that disease starts, you can't stop it. It's already started now, so we got to keep up with that once we start.
Yeah. So once you decide you're thinking about kind of fruit that you're interested in growing, you have something in mind, you think about maybe how much fruit you want to produce, you've considered the weather here in the deep South, especially the state of Alabama, and you think about the time and effort and finances, the space that you need, you got to have full sun from a site selection, okay? You've got to have full sun to grow fruits. That's number one.
That's number one. And someone say, well, it gets full sun at 10 o'clock, and it's in the sun till 2. I do not consider that partial shade. It needs to be sun from the sun up to sun down. It needs to be in the sun if we're growing fruit.
And we worry about those late spring frosts. Those beautiful peaches begin to bloom out, and boom, here come March. That's one reason we call it blackberry winter for a reason. We get a cold spell, seems like around Easter, and a lot of times those fruit varieties will get hurt. And so the full sun, it could be good, but you can avoid those frost pockets.
Yeah, the cold settles in low areas. So if I'm planting fruit, I want my fruit on the side of a hill. The cold drains down to the low spot. So we could put vegetables in the low spot, and we could just delay planting. But the fruit, when it's blooming, it's very susceptible to the cold. And a lot of people say, well, I'll put it on, what about the south side of a hill or the north side of a hill? Well, it depends. I like either one, fine. But on the south side, if they're blooming and you have a cold, it might be protected from the hill. So that's good if it's on the south side. But if it's on the north side, a lot of people like that because, well, if it's on the north side, it stays colder. It delayed blooming, but it all depends on the year. Some years want to work and not another, but a sloping hill is what I like.
Chip and I mentioned that, you know, there can be a lot of challenges of growing fruits. There are some that are a lot easier than others. But even when things go right, you have good weather, you have good sight, you've got the right variety, there's always the risk of a problem occurring.
Well, if it was easy, everybody would do it. It's hard. I mean, that's farming can be tough. So, yeah, there's a lot of problems. And the thing that I worry about the most are things that's out of our control. Yeah. And weather is a lot of it. And we can talk rain, and that's a problem too. But if we have a lot of rain, a lot of times we build our beds, like for blueberries, for instance, on a raised bed. So we need internal drainage, like a heavy, heavy clay drains poorly. Well, we can improve that. We can make a mound like a raised bed, and yes, we can improve our drainage. That's something we're in control of. We're not in control of how much rain we get, but we can let it roll off the site better if we do our site selection, again, the raised beds. Well, if you're in a drought, there's something I can do about that. I can provide irrigation to that, and I wouldn't plant anything, especially a farmer, if I didn't. Usually we use drip irrigation, but I would put irrigation by that crop. I would actually have my irrigation, the well, the stream, whatever, water to the field before I even set the crop out, because I've seen people set it out and then worry about drilling a well. Well, it dies in the meantime. So I would want my water ready before I even set the crops. Those are things we're in charge of, and that's exactly right.
That late spring frost, though, is probably the big thing that always hits the media. We read about that. Everybody's concerned about the peach crop being frozen there in March. You got strawberries that hurt by the cold. And then the whole crop is ruined.
When that bloom dies, it won't bloom. Now, if a bloom hasn't opened yet, that can be saved. But when that thing opens, it's not going to – that bloom is gone for the year. And – that is something we're very concerned with. And again, the farmer plants on a hill or a hillside, and that's all good. We can use row covers to actually cover Frost blankets is another term, but we're just covering the works a lot good with strawberries, for instance. It's done a lot like with blueberries and tree fruits. It pokes holes. It's like a blanket we're putting over the crop. I mean, that works. It's just on woody type things. It those row covers cost money. And anyway, it works very good with strawberries, but with the tree fruits, a lot of times we use water. You know, energy's released when water freezes, and that's done a lot. And certain crops. Again, peaches bloom early. Blueberries are a lot of fruit crop is early. Well, I've been doing blueberries a long time. There's early, mid, and late season blueberries. And like Southern High Bush blooms early. I like them. They're one of my favorite blueberries is Southern High Bush. Thin skin. Boy, it's good quality fruit. But they bloom early. Well, I plant them. Don't misunderstand. We plant them. But the cold gets them a lot too. So the rabbit eyes bloom later. And maybe the cold don't get them. But even the later rabbit eyes, some of them are blooming while the others are tied in a bud. What if you had a cold come in at that point in time? The one that's tied in the bud might still make a fruit, but the one that's blooming is injured by the cold. So I'm not saying we can avoid the potential problems. We got the problems because just because the cold don't get you today, it can get you in a week when the other one's blooming. But these are things we do to help.
And the frustration is when you have a good season, good spring, you miss the frost, then you got to worry about the disease and insects that come in the summer. Mm-hmm. And those tree fruits specifically have a lot of disease, have a lot of insects. And so Chip and I would recommend a home orchard spray or fruit spray. A lot of times those products are good to just spray every 10 days or 14 days based on the label. If you're a commercial grower or farmer, you may separate those out into multiple applications. But if you want those fruits, Chip, you got to spray because the bugs and disease will wipe you out.
And it all depends on the quality of fruit you want. And the, you know, peaches, for instance, is different than blueberries that when we talk about spraying. But yeah, fungicides on peach, we generally spray it might be every 10 to 14 days for a homeowner. The farmer may spray more often, but it's got to be a perfect crop.
And it starts day one. As soon as the blooms begin to fade, you've got to start that application.
There are certain things, like we'll spray for scale, for instance. We'll do a dormant oil spray, and we'll spray that in January, February. We'll spray twice, if not three times. Maybe, well, we'll start with our fungicides. Like when we see like pink in the bloom, it's actually even before the bloom's open, we'll start with a fungicide on, for instance, peach trees. Now, insects, a lot of times we're scouting and we're looking for an insect, either damage or the bug itself, but the disease is too late. Once you see it with your eye, it's already a problem. So we'll do that preventative and spray early.
Chip, now let's turn our attention to going shopping. We've seen all these pretty pictures. Hey, we get an advertisement. We get a seed catalog. We see an online photo of a beautiful blueberry, this delicious peaches and apples. Oh, hey, I think I want to grow those. We go to the nursery. We go to an online catalog source. We go to a retail store. You know, what do we, now we've decided, hey, I want an apple, I want a peach, I want a muscadine. How do we know what to get?
Good question, and we've got a lot of research reports that'll recommend certain varieties for our area. So wherever you in the country, the extension office can your local office can provide you with information. These are the peaches recommended for this part of the state. This is the blueberries recommended for this part of the state. You see what I mean? And just because you got a friend in two states over that say this is the best, I don't know, strawberry. Well, I'm sure it is. That's good for them. But for us, that might not work. So I would look at those things, research reports, where people have actually, it's been grown, and we do know through research trials.
One of those, some vocabulary words at you, is pollination. Do I need one? Do I need two for this particular crop? So let's talk about cross-pollination and self-pollination. If you have apples and blueberries, kiwi fruit, pears, plums, even certain type of muscadines that are typically female, you always have to have a cross. You have to have at least two, you know, male and female to get that cross-pollination.
And it's easy for me to say for any crop, I love cross-pollination. I like to have more than one of different, we call them cultivars, or we can say varieties. In certain things, you have to have cross-pollination for it's the quality of fruit. And in the case, well, I'll just mention blueberry, but it can be anything. Better cross-pollination results in a bigger berry. Okay, well, that one reason would make me want to have cross-pollination. Now, there's other reasons why I would like the cross-pollination or different varieties, I'll say that. Early, mid, and late season, in the case of blueberries, I want two or three early. They'll cross-pollinate amongst themselves, two or three mid, two or three late. Now, I'm not saying a mid-season couldn't pollinate an early one or a late one, but I like to have a couple of early, couple or more, a couple of mid, couple of late. Well, this extends our berry picking season. So one, we're helping on the cross pollination, but two, I can pick berries early in the year to late in the year. Even though this one over here is my favorite, but if it's early, you know, for the rest of the year after it's gone, I can't eat that anymore. So I love having different ones. Things that do require, some things just flat out require it. You know, apple, blueberry, pecan, kiwi fruit, pears, plums, certain muscadines, female muscadines. See, we can have self-fertile muscadines, but let's just say muscadines. I like them cross-pollinated. But peaches, you can have the whole field of the same kind of peach. You know, they're self-pollination.
A lot of us ask about, hey, I only got room for one plant, too. So if you have something that's self-pollinated, you know, you could have just a fig. You could just have a citrus, a lemon, satsuma, lime. You could have that one peach tree that you talked about if you got room in the backyard, maybe on a small piece of property. Yeah. So that's an advantage when they're self-pollinated.
Blackberries, citrus, that's right. We could have one. However, there's a lot you can – these nurseries that sell them will graft another tree onto it. Like if you wanted an apple, you got room for one. We could graft three or four or more than that, different apple varieties onto one tree. So even though there's room for one tree, we can have several apples and we wouldn't have to worry about our pollination then.
Other things to consider if you talk to a reputable nursery about selecting fruits is chill hours, root stocks. Now we're getting real technical on some things, but we want to make sure listeners understand this, and we have these references. There's publications that definitely go in more detail about this. You got to make sure you have the right chill hours. Chip, what does that mean?
And it's chill hours are important for certain crops. So some of them require very little chilling. It's no big deal. Others require more, and that's where it's important. The chill hour is measured as the amount of time trees are exposed to cool temperatures. Well, 43 degrees might be the perfect hour. 43 is a chill hour. But we can be above freezing a little. We could be around 50 or better and get some chilling. But those are the times we're looking for. And if you have a week of temperatures at 20 degrees, you may get zero chilling for those that week because we're too cold. We don't get the chilling. And then if you get temperatures hitting in the 70s the next day, it can erase chilling that we had the last 24 to 36 hours. So there's a lot of different, as you might imagine, models or formulas for calculating chill hours. We keep up with it here. There's a website we have that that lists the different models, and here's the chilling we had. We can look up 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Here's the chilling we had this day last year, and we compare this day to last year. But if you look up, go to our website, type in chill hours, all that information is there. We want to match, for instance, if you have a peach you love, and when I really think about it, when I think of peaches, that's a 850 chill hour peach. I do not want to plant that in a location that receives 1,000 chill hours or 1,200 chill hours. It's going to want to bloom once it gets its chilling, just waiting on a warm day. And so if you have a low chilling plant and you're in a certain location, people call us, hey, I got this tree, it's blooming in January every year. I know the chill hours wrong.
Yeah, that peach was designed more for South Alabama, not North Alabama.
Absolutely.
And so it blooms early. So if people see these peaches and pears blooming early when it may be still February or March, then you know that's more of a low chilling hour fruit tree. That's not the good variety that you want in this area. And you're going to get killed by frost every year.
And it may taste good. That peach that your friend in South Alabama has in their yard may be a wonderful peach, but it wouldn't do well for someone in North Alabama, for instance.
And the next thing to consider, especially if you're getting fruit trees, is rootstock. Because people always want to ask us about size of the tree, the varieties, and even they see this on plant tags, dwarf apple, dwarf peach. Now, that's being dictated by the rootstock. Most people don't understand this, but size of that tree is dictated what kind of rootstock it's on.
Years ago, we had trees on, people say, are they on their own roots, or it depends on the plant, but these big, I'll just say apples, you don't want that fruit, they want to be hand-picked. If they hit the ground and bruise, that's not good later. People don't want to buy that, so they want to be hand-picked. Well, if it's a big tree, it's harder to hand-pick, so they put them on a dwarfing rootstock, and there's so many different rootstocks. We could talk about that one day, but so many different rootstocks that might be, this one may be 75% of a standard tree, or 50%, or some can be less than that. We actually put them on trellis. They're small. And well, what we do for the farmer, the trees are smaller, so we can put them closer together. We get about the same production per acre, but you don't have to pay employees to climb up and down ladders all day. Think about that. And so for the homeowner, same thing. I mean, it's a smaller tree, so maybe we don't get as much production, but we can plant a couple of them.
Do your homework when it comes to size of the trees. You know the variety of the cultivar, and also know what rootstock they're on, because you don't want to invest in a tree, you know, long term. It's going to take a while when it gets too big or too short. So make sure you do your homework in that regard.
And I will say, those trees that are grafted, and you always see it might be crooked at the bottom if it was budded, but we grow a tree, a rootstock, and then we cut it and put another tree, the Red Delicious or some plant we like, on that. So we got two different trees in one. Well, that's why they cost more money when it's been grafted. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's somebody had to work harder to get it. So, yes, they're more money, but there's benefits of having other rootstocks. In the case of peaches, for instance, there's nematode-resistant rootstocks. You see what I mean? If it's ornamentals, there's roses that have a better rootstock, or camellias. This camellia would have a better rootstock, so we're grafting it. So there's a reason for doing that, and it's a good reason. That's why nurseries do it. It's not just to charge you money. They've got more money invested in it, but it's for your benefit.
Yeah, just think about rootstocks as this. So you've seen full-grown big apple trees, and you've seen trellis apples. Those are on different rootstocks that are dictating the height and the use. And typically a smaller tree typically produces faster than, say, the standard big apple tree that may take 5 years to produce apples.
Depends on the tree. There's a particular pear that I like, and I like it because it's fire blight resistant. Well, that pear takes a long time to produce, and it's grafted.
Folks, there's a lot when it comes to selecting fruits that you want to grow in your home backyard, your home orchard, or there on your farm. We've at least tapped into some of those questions, dug deep into selecting fruits. If you need more information about growing fruits, reach out to your local county extension office. We have lots of resources on our website. That's with the Alabama Cooperative Extension System. And you can learn more, watch videos, contact your extension office for more information about growing fruits. Chip, enjoyed talking with you today here on Southern Ground. Looking forward to a future episode where we dig deeper into some of your topics, your questions that you may have. And we're going to try to address those throughout this podcast on future episodes. Chip, good to see you today.
Absolutely, Shane. Thank you.
Southern Ground has been a production of Alabama Extension at Auburn University.